You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on So Good, They Can't Ignore You. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on So Good, They Can't Ignore You. Why Skills Trump Passion in the Quest for Work You Love by Cal Newport. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. This argument flips conventional wisdom. It relegates passion to the sidelines, claiming that this feeling is an epiphenomenon of a working life well lived. Don't follow your passion. Rather, let it follow you in your quest to become, in the words of my favorite Steve Martin quote, so good that they can't ignore you. It's my hope that the insights that follow will free you from simplistic catchphrases like follow your passion and do what you love, the type of catchphrases that have helped spawn the career confusion that afflicts so many today, and instead provide you with a realistic path toward a meaningful and engaging working life. End quote. That is Cal Newport from So Good, They Can't Ignore You. Cal Newport is a writer and assistant professor of computer science at Georgetown. He got his PhD from MIT and runs a popular blog called Study Hacks, Decoding Patterns of Success. In this book, he decodes the pattern of finding work that inspires you and tells us, as per the subtitle, why skills trump passion in the quest for work you love. The title of the book comes from comedian Steve Martin's advice to aspiring entertainers to be so good they can't ignore you. I love that. If you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life, I think you'll love this book. It provides a really important perspective on the pitfalls of passion and the power of being a craftsman. The book is packed with big ideas, and I'm excited to share some of my favorites, so let's jump straight in. First big idea, the four rules. Quote, rule number one, don't follow your passion. Rule number two, be so good they can't ignore you, or the importance of skill. Rule number three, turn down a promotion, or the importance of control. Rule number four, think small, act big, or the importance of mission. End quote. Those four rules are the four primary sections of the book. Each is packed with wisdom and stories of various individuals unlocking the secrets of each rule, plus others who failed to do so. All right, now let's take a quick look at some big ideas to help us apply those rules. Next big idea, self-determination theory. Quote, when Dan Pink talks about what science knows, he's referring, for the most part, to a 40-year-old theoretical framework known as self-determination theory, SDT, which is arguably the best understanding science currently has for why some pursuits get our engines running while others leave us cold. SDT tells us that motivation in the workplace or elsewhere requires that you fulfill three basic psychological needs. Factors described as the nutriments required to feel intrinsically motivated for your work. 1. Autonomy, the feeling that you have control over your day and that your actions are important. 2. Competence, the feeling that you are good at what you do. And 3. Relatedness, the feeling of connection to other people. End quote. Self-determination theory, or SDT. If we want to understand how to create work we love, it's a good idea to keep the three aspects of SDT in mind: autonomy, plus competence, plus relatedness. The book is essentially a strategic guide to optimizing our intrinsic motivation, which is essential to having work you love. Quick inventory. Do you feel like you have control over your days and that your actions matter? Do you feel like you're good at what you do? Do you feel connected to other people in your work? Autonomy, competence, relatedness. How we answer those questions matters. Cal encourages us to notice a very important thing. Science does not tell us that we need to match a pre-existing passion to our work if we want to find happiness in our work. That's actually a really good thing, because that means most of us, in most of our jobs, can create the right conditions for our autonomy, competence, and relatedness to flourish. As Cal says repeatedly throughout the book, working right trumps finding the right work. Which leads us to the next big idea, mindsets, craftsmen versus passion. Quote, to summarize, I've presented two different ways people think about their working life. The first is the craftsman mindset, which focuses on what you can offer the world, The second is the passion mindset, which instead focuses on what the world can offer you. The craftsman mindset offers clarity, while the passion mindset offers a swamp of ambiguous and unanswerable questions. There's something liberating about the craftsman mindset. It asks you to leave behind self-centered concerns about whether your job is just right, and instead put your head down and plug away at getting really damn good. No one owes you a great career, it argues. You need to earn it, and the process won't be easy. End quote. The craftsman mindset. I love that. Now, I think Cal gets a little more either-or about it than necessary, but there's no question that ultimately, assuming the mindset of a craftsman is where it's at. Bottom line, even if you happen to be blessed with a sense of purpose plus passion, you better be committed to mastering your craft and finding ways to meaningfully create value in the world, or you run the risk of winding up broke and bitter. Cal shares some stories about people following their passions, including a novice yoga teacher running into the problem of thinking passion by itself is enough. It's not. More on that in a moment. And I absolutely love the distinction between focusing on getting value versus creating value. One of the biggest pitfalls of the passion mindset is the obsessive focus on what's in it for you, how your job is going to make your life awesome. That's not going to get us very far. Focusing on our passion might inspire us to quit our jobs, but if we want to pay the bills and flourish over the long run, we need to shift our focus to getting really good at creating value that, important addition, people will pay for. As Cal says, quote, whereas the craftsman mindset focuses on what you can offer the world, the passion mindset focuses on what the world can offer you. This mindset is how most people approach their working lives, end quote. We need to obsess, all caps, about how we're going to make other people's lives awesome. Getting value versus creating value. Where's your focus? Here's to the craftsman mindset. P.S. Steve Chandler captures this wisdom in his great book, Wealth Warrior. See those notes. He tells us, sorry, temporarily out of service. I won't produce wealth when I'm out of service. Get it? Out of service will not work, because when I'm out of service, I am out of service. This I mean to whisper to my mind every day. He also tells us, reminder to myself, money is a reflection of bold and creative service. PPS, here's a great question to reflect on. How can you serve more profoundly? I got that phrase to serve profoundly from Steve. That's the focus of his entire coaching practice, creating wealth through profound service. He also introduced me to the word astonish, which literally means to strike with lightning. That's the game we want to play, finding ways to astonish the people we serve profoundly. We create that type of value in the world, and we'll get plenty in return. But we need to get the order right. All right, we got a little space in the PDF, so we can capture ways we can serve more profoundly and create more value for people in our lives. Five things. I can serve more profoundly in these ways. Fill in the blank. One, I can do this to serve more profoundly. Two, three, four, and five. Take the time right now. Press pause. Think about it. How can you serve more profoundly? How can you create value in the world? That's the craftsman mindset. We're setting a record here. We've got another PS. This is PPPS. Another way to think about the passion versus craftsman mindset is to look at Stephen Pressfield's amateur versus pro distinction. An amateur, by definition, loves what he does. A pro commits his life to mastering his craft. Here's how Pressfield puts it in Turning Pro. See those notes? He says, quote, the thesis of this book is that what ails you and me has nothing to do with being sick or being wrong. What ails us is that we are living our lives as amateurs. The solution, this book suggests, is that we turn pro. Turning pro is free, but it's not easy. You don't need to take a course or buy a product. All you have to do is change your mind. Turning pro is free, but not without a cost. When we turn pro, we give up a life with which we may have become extremely comfortable. We give up a self that we have come to identify with and to call our own. Turning pro is not for everyone. We have to be a little crazy to do it, or even to want to. In many ways, the passage chooses us. We don't choose it. We simply have no alternative. What we get when we turn pro is we find our power. We find our will and our voice, and we find our self-respect. We become who we always were but had, until then, been afraid to embrace and to live out. Do you remember where you were on 9/11? You'll remember where you were when you turned pro, end quote. Let's turn pro and create value like a craftsman. That leads us to the next big idea, crafting a deliberate practice. Quote, when I first encountered the work of Erickson and Charnas, this insight startled me. It told me that in most types of work, that is, work that doesn't have a clear training philosophy, most people are stuck. This generates an exciting implication. Let's assume you're a knowledge worker, which is in a field without a clear training philosophy. If you can figure out how to integrate deliberate practice into your life, you have the possibility of blowing past your peers and your value, as you'll likely be alone in your dedication to systematically getting better. That is, deliberate practice might provide the key to quickly becoming so good they can't ignore you. To successfully adopt the craftsman mindset, therefore, we have to approach our jobs with a dedication to deliberate practice. End quote. Erickson and Charnas are the researchers who first discovered the 10,000-hour rule of world-class performance. Cal shares the way Malcolm Gladwell describes their research in Outliers. See the notes on that book. Gladwell tells us, quote, the idea that excellence at performing a complex task requires a critical minimum level of practice surfaces again and again in studies of expertise. In fact, researchers have settled on what they believe is the magic number for true expertise, 10,000 hours, end quote. Whether it's violinists, radiologists, chess masters, or performers in any field, it's all about logging a huge amount of effort. But it's not enough to just work hard. We need to deliberately practice trying to get better. We need to stretch ourselves beyond our comfort zones again and again and again, incrementally improving our skills. George Mumford tells us we need to romance our discomfort zone. Here's how he puts it in The Mindful Athlete. See those notes and a micro class on this very subject. He says, quote, our bodies like to be in homeostasis. We like to be balanced. Life is hard enough. We want to be comfortable. But again, to get better and improve our game on and off the court, we need to move out of our comfort zones. That doesn't mean you should go so far out of your comfort zone that you can't function well. Our bodies work best when we push them in small increments. If we push ourselves too far, eustress can become distress. We have to really pay attention because they can manifest the same symptoms. Eustress is achieved through moderation, sticking to the middle way and not going to extremes. Moving out of your comfort zone through experiencing eustress is a continuous, incremental process of romancing your discomfort zone. It's not like you get to a certain level and then stay there. Things are always either going forward or backward. They're not staying static. If you are comfortable where you are and you just want to stay comfortable, that's fine. But that isn't the way to pursue excellence and wisdom. End quote. Now, all that's reasonably straightforward for professional athletes and chess players and others with a clear practice strategy. For the rest of us knowledge workers, there's good news and bad news. Bad news, there's no clearly defined way for us to deliberately practice. Good news, if we figure out how to deliberately practice, we'll be one of the very few in our fields who actually train ourselves to get better, which means we'll powerfully differentiate ourselves from those who do not. Cal shares a number of key habits and lessons in the book. Check it out for more. For now, what can you do to cultivate a deliberate practice in your chosen field? Think about that and get on it. Next big idea, career capital. Quote, the career capital theory of great work. The traits that define great work are rare and valuable. Supply and demand says that if you want these traits, you need rare and valuable skills to offer in return. Think of these rare and valuable skills you can offer as your career capital. The craftsman mindset, with its relentless focus on becoming so good they can't ignore you, is a strategy well suited for acquiring career capital. This is why it trumps the passion mindset if your goal is to create work you love. End quote. So, one of the keys to successfully creating sustainable work we love is to build what Cal calls career capital. He makes the really important point that as we put in the deliberate practice in pursuit of becoming so good they can't ignore us, we accumulate rare and valuable skills. It's this career capital accumulated over years of diligent, deliberate practice that we cash in to create our ideal work. Failing to see the importance of this process is one of the reasons why, for example, a passionate new yoga teacher who just completed a 200-hour certification process is not yet in a solid position to build a sustainable career. Enough career capital hasn't been accumulated. There are a lot of yoga teachers or life coaches or fill in the blank who have the very basic level of training. Those skills are not rare or valuable yet. We need to be very honest with ourselves about just how much work is required to create our ideal work. All caps here, passion is not enough. We must become craftsmen, so good they can't ignore us. Which leads us to the final big idea, right work versus working right. Quote, I argued in rule number one that follow your passion is bad advice. As the vast majority of people don't have pre-existing passions waiting to be discovered and matched to a job. In rule number two, I then countered that people with compelling careers instead start by getting good at something rare and valuable, building what I call career capital, and then cashing in this capital for the traits that make great work great. In this understanding, finding the right work pales in importance to working right, end quote. Finding the right work versus working right, passion versus craftsman. As we've discussed a number of times in this note, Cal's message is clear. Passion by itself won't get us where we want to go. It's not about simply finding the right work. We need to work right. Let's do that as we optimize and actualize and get so good they can't ignore us. There you go, Cal Newport. Thank you. So good they can't ignore you. Hope you enjoyed. If you did, I think you'll also enjoy the note on talent is overrated, turning pro, the talent code, mindset, how to fail at almost everything and still win big, and wealth warrior. We've got links to all those in the PDF. Now we are ready for some great quotes from the sidebar, all from Cal. He tells us, my question was clear. How do people end up loving what they do? And I needed an answer. This book documents what I discovered in my search. Cal, quoting Steve Martin, says, nobody ever takes my advice. Because it's not the answer they wanted to hear, Martin said. What they want to hear is, here's how you get an agent. Here's how you write a script. But I always say, be so good, they can't ignore you. Regardless of how you feel about your job right now, adopting the craftsman mindset will be the foundation on which you'll build a compelling career. If you want to love what you do, abandon the passion mindset. What can the world offer me? And instead adopt the craftsman mindset. What can I offer the world? Another deliberate practice routine was the introduction of my hour tally. The sheet has a row for each month on which I keep a tally of the total number of hours I've spent that month in a state of deliberate practice. Cal tells us, strain, I now accepted, was good. Instead of seeing this discomfort as a sensation to avoid, I began to understand it the same way that a bodybuilder understands muscle burn, a sign that you're doing something right. He tells us, the law of financial viability. When deciding whether to follow an appealing pursuit that will introduce more control into your work life, seek evidence of whether people are willing to pay for it. If you find this evidence, continue. If not, move on. And finally, remember, working right trumps finding the right work. There you go. Let's be so good they can't ignore us. Hope you enjoyed. Look forward to sharing more. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.